And now to the United States. Well, not entirely the United States. There's been a loss of faith in institutions around the world, and the United States is grappling with that now. The question is, why is that the case? Many seek to blame Trump. But our next guest says, look, this has been happening for a long time, and Trump is not the cause of it. He's actually cashing in on it. So joining me now from the United States is Bill Bishop, a journalist who's written on this very issue, Americans have lost faith in institutions. Bill Bishop, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you.
Well, you say the loss of trust has been around for a long time, and you've traced it a fair way back, haven't you?
Well, trust in government peaked here in the United States in about 1964. And then from then on, until the 70s, it dropped dramatically. But it wasn't just trust in government that dropped, it was trust in almost every institution. And when political scientists then began looking around the world, they saw that at about the same time trust dropped in the United States, it also dropped in just about every other industrialized country.
Well, I know you've said that in 1964, 3 out of 4 Americans trusted their government. That's a whopping 75%. But by 1976, that had dropped down to 33%. What do you think caused that? I mean, they were tumultuous times, the 60s, but that is a dramatic loss of trust in government.
It was a dramatic loss, and Americans being self-centered, I'm sure you all have noticed that, tend to attribute that decline in trust to things that happened in the United States, so Watergate or the Watts riots in 1965 or the tumult of the civil rights movement or the assassinations in the late 1960s. But the trouble with all those explanations is that they don't explain why trust dropped in labor unions and in businesses and in churches and in almost every institution you can imagine in the United States. And at about the same time, trust in government dropped in Japan and France and Italy and I believe Australia and New Zealand and across the world, people began turning away from the institutions that had sort of glued their societies together, and they began to trust mostly themselves.
Robert Putnam, I think, is a sociologist in the United States, wrote the book Bowling Alone and has catalogued the drop in membership for things like service clubs, Lions, etc., the League of Women Voters and bowling leagues. People moving out of associations with each other and working alone. That's caused us now to almost invent our own lives rather than live a community life, hasn't it?
Yes. I mean, Zygmunt Bauman, a Polish sociologist who died recently in Great Britain, described the situation these days as we're all have become artists of our own lives. Essentially, he's describing what happens in the modern world. And in the modern world, people get richer as they get more educated, as they live in more diverse societies and more in urban areas, as the economy rewards independence rather than following the rules, people begin to withdraw from these institutions and begin to lose trust in older ways of life. Divorce rates go up. People drop out of church. All those things happen at the same time in response to the sort of pressures and changes and globalization that is found in the modern world.
You talk about the effect on our mental state and the degree to which it leaves people, you might say in one sense, having the freedom to construct their own life, but the other is the responsibility and the burden of constructing their own life, and that imposes on some a too high a burden. Do you think that's in part why we're seeing what are reported as being high rates of depression?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess high rates of depression and drug use in Australia as well as here. I don't know. In Japan, let me go back. The Alain Ehrenberg, a French sociologist, wrote a book translated in English as The Weariness of the Self. And his contention is that as people are required by society to create their own lives, to choose their own God, choose their sex, decide what they're going to be that day, become their own brand. You know, there are all sorts of seminars in the U.S. saying, this is how you should become your own brand. And the gig economy now requires people to be their own businesses. That is too much for people, and that depression and anxiety and drug and alcohol abuse are what he says truly are a modern disease. And so in Japan, you have the hikikomori, if I'm pronouncing that right, the young people who stay in their rooms and play video games, not wanting to go out into the outside world. When that scaffolding that holds up people and held up people through generations of organizations that you described, and the meaning of family and the continuity of occupation, and as those have lost their strength and people have been left on their own to become artists of their own lives, then a lot of us just can't keep up, and depression is one of the results.
Yet I don't understand, and perhaps you have some insight into this, or perhaps it's one of those things that we're not meant to understand. With this opportunity or pressure to be ourselves, find ourselves, create ourselves, you point out that in the United States, while nationally there's a lack of trust in government, in communities, smaller communities, they tend to devote very much the same way, implying that in those areas, there is a real sense of community and not just individualism. How can you help us explain that?
Well, the phenomenon in the United States, and a sociologist, Bob Cushing, and I wrote a book called The Big Sort. And what we found was that beginning in the mid-1970s, most communities in the United States have become increasingly either Republican or Democratic. So that in this latest election that was more than close, I mean, it was within a percent or two, but 60% of the voters in the latest U.S. election lived in a community where either Trump or Clinton won by 20 percentage points or greater. 80% of U.S. counties, and there are over 3,100 of them, voted in a landslide for either Clinton or Trump. And so what is happening is that people are, and I think in response to these modern pressures to define the self, are congregating among people who live like they do and think like they do. They go to the same kind of shops and buy the same kind of clothes and eat the same kind of food, and every 4 years vote the same way on election day. So that one of the substitutes for identity in the U.S. now is party identification. So, I mean, some studies have found that in 1960, people didn't much care whether their sons or daughters married a Republican or a Democrat. Yeah. Now it's very important to most people that their sons or daughters marry someone from the same party as they are. And in fact, some measures of discrimination show greater discrimination based on party choice than on race in the United States. Party identity becomes really important. People congregate to be in their tribe. And once the tribe is together, it's easier then for a community to vote. In some counties in Texas, you know, it's okay to carry a gun into a school. In other counties, you know, there are gun control laws that are enacted. And so those local majorities are allowing communities to do things with government that are impossible nationally because the Congress in the U.S. is so split.
Mm. With these very diverse communities, albeit there might be pockets where, you know, like-minded people, as you say, congregated in the same place and voting a majority for Trump or a majority for Clinton, with the increasing diversity that comes, doesn't that make it much harder to run democratic systems?
Well, it makes it harder on a national level, yes, but it makes it easier on a local level because you have everybody agrees with you, or at least you have an overwhelming majority. And so there aren't those fundamental differences that you find in the U.S. Congress. I mean, you saw the same phenomenon took place, you know, with the Brexit vote in Great Britain,
yeah.
That there were vast differences in a fairly close vote. And I think, I forget the figures, but half the people lived in a place where that vote was a landslide. I mean, this is conjecture, really. But that party and those overt indications that come out of public life have become part of people's identity. And that's what makes it so hard for people to compromise or give up. Or it's not, in the old days, it was the class differences defined politics. And the bosses got together with the labor people and they, you know, they cut the baby and split the baby, whatever, however they could. And a deal was made. But now we're in politics is about identity. You know, it's hard to split your identity. No one wants to.
Indeed.
And with the institutions lacking the power to make those deals, you're left with the kind of gridlock here that you all may have been reading about.
Bill Bishop from the United States, I thank you for joining us today and talking about this issue, which no doubt we will be talking about in years to come.
Thank you.